everybody. My name is Anne Teyato, and welcome to the Psychic Matters podcast, episode number 15. In the studio today is none other than psychic medium and astrologer Mark, the Midwest medium. Mark explains how mediumship and astrology have changed over the decades and why they will continue to evolve as time rolls forward.
We can't do everything that the old mediums did, but we can't get rid of what they did either. In order to grow and evolve as mediums today and going into the future, we have to have a balance of understanding what mediums used to do, as well as doing our way, our unique way. How do we evolve? We have to be ourselves. We have to be ourselves and really take time to understand how we receive communication and also self-awareness with the human being. Not every medium is destined to do this for career or to teach it, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's millions of mediums on the earth.
In this episode, Mark speaks about the importance of focusing on your strengths and not on your weaknesses. He'll tell you why your vulnerability works in your favor as a medium and how your own suffering helps your compassion. If you've always wondered about spirit guides or telepathy or how to read auras, Mark covers it all. This is an episode absolutely jam-packed with information from the brilliant mind and gentle soul of this incredibly knowledgeable gentleman. Ready? Let's go. In the Psychic Matters studio today, I'm joined by psychic medium and astrologer Mark, the Midwest medium. Mark, welcome to Psychic Matters.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here, Anne.
Mark, let me hand over to you, and you can tell people who you are, what you do, where you come from, and the type of work that you do.
So I'm a medium, a psychic, and an astrologer. My journey kind of professionally began in 2002. I am located in the Chicagoland area in the United States, hence the name Midwest, because that region is considered the Midwest of the United States. I started my career, oddly enough, doing palm reading. I can't say it went very well. In fact, the person that was supposedly going to hire me felt I looked too young, because at that time I was 22. All of a sudden, the colors in her aura popped for me, which was the first time I've ever seen colors in the aura. And she told me immediately that she had to hire me. So I believe that was like a defining moment where I said, maybe I can do this for a living, and maybe I can have my passion be a career. So,
and what was that like? Sorry to interrupt you just at the beginning, but you say the colors of her aura popped for you. What did that look like? How did that feel? How did you sense that?
It was incredible, because I didn't believe in the aura at all. I had seen a book on it, and I said, this is hot wash. You know, to my surprise, when I get there to do a reading to audition basically for a job at my young age, and I had to look about 16, you know, to be there, to be rejected, and then the colors appeared to me. They were so vivid and they were so real. It was as if they were in the room with me. I mean, I saw them clairvoyantly, objectively. I saw orange and purple on this woman's aura. And she said, 2 weeks prior to this, a psychic came in here and said my aura was purple and orange. And I was freaked out. So I was amazed. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe, first of all, auras are real. Second of all, you can actually see the colors. And the third, that, yeah, in fact, that I think this is going to be something that I can do to make some sort of living with. And it's certainly something that I had passion for. But between 2002 and 2011, there just really wasn't many opportunities to sustain an income to live off of. So I did normal jobs, and I even eventually got into clinical psych for a short, brief time. But I did everything in this sort of line of work. I did like the phones, I did chats, I did stores, you know, centers, I've done platform, I've been on, you know, been on radio, television, you name it. And they're all very different. They all have their own set of challenges. But I would think out of everything, mediumship is really my number one passion. Astrology is the second place, and I do love astrology. But if I have to pick one, it's definitely the mediumship. But I can say this, and I'm sure many other people who are listening can relate. Anytime you use some sort of other tool to help you, it does strengthen your insights as a medium. And I do feel like astrology has helped me as a medium. And it also has opened me up to understand life a lot more as well. That is kind of the short, very brief summary of who I am and what I'm doing.
Gosh, that's amazing. Let's talk about your training. So where did you train? How did you learn all of these different faculties and skills?
Mostly on my own. So literally for the palm reading, for instance, I just picked it because I didn't have cards. That's literally, someone said, why don't you get a job because we think you have ability, which was another psychic. I wasn't formally trained. I just saw a book. I saw a line. I go, oh, that's what a line on a palm is. I guess I'll read it. And I did. I was never trained on the aura. No one ever told me, first of all, you could see the colors like that. So it was freakish. And then, as time went on, eventually I got to a place in my life where I said, maybe I want to take it a little bit more serious and try to push this. The mediumship too, I really wasn't trained. I had opportunities to sit in some circles here and there. I even sort of gotten friends with like a psychic store where I got a break. I was lucky to get a fortunate break. But I was really on my own. I mean, I was kind of on my own. I call it a baptism by fire. Not many people do like go from nothing to professional just like that. It just doesn't happen. But I really didn't have a choice. There was no classes. I mean, today you have a lot of options. And believe me, do that. Like I teach now and I tell my students, please take the classes. It was a lot of heartbreak when you don't have formal training. It's a lot of lumps. It's hard. They call it hard knocks of life. Well, you ain't kidding. Because I mean, it's rough to have no training and no help and no real guidance and then sit in front of strangers who are very skeptical and, not really go easy on you. It's not a real fun experience. You want a little bit of some sort of gentle guidance along your way.
How did you keep going and not get discouraged?
Well, I was here and there. I was discouraged. I did meet other professionals that were psychics and mediums that were, I mean, there was a lot of them that were able to say, you do have ability, keep going. And some of them would basically kind of chat with me informally. Most of my help, though, for my struggles, I got read. So I would pay for reading and I would say, oh, I like this type of style. I like that type of style. Not a lot of people do that, though, especially today. I don't like a lot of my students say that I've never had a reading. I go, you should get a ton of readings from a ton of different people from all around the world. And then you can see, oh, I do that. Oh, I don't do that. Oh, that's me. That's not me. And you can compare and contrast. And really, that's kind of how I molded myself as a reader, because you can be a psychic and a medium, but it's different than actually presenting readings because you have to have sort of an organization to your methodology, presentation. You have to put the client's interests and their emotional needs. All that stuff, takes a while. I kind of got my understanding of what a reading was, the structure and all that, just by being read from other people. That's honestly that. But later on, I had other mediums, and there's a lot of them, so I can't name them all because they'll get mad at me if I don't name them. And they've said, oh, keep going, basically. You can do it. And so that's really all you need. I feel like if you just have this acknowledgement that somebody's listening, it's really the best gift you can give them.
Sounds to me like you had always had a great faith in your own ability to do the job in the first place.
Well, yeah. So that started at 3 years old. So when I was three, I remember it. I'll never forget this. Hopefully I never forget it. I remember I was 3 years old taking a nap. It was 5 o'clock at night. It was winter, just when it gets dark. And I sat up in my bed. I looked out into my father's room and there was my grandmother and she was in spirit. And I was like, I was totally captivated, completely captivated. I saw her objectively, clairvoyantly, as if she was in the room. But she was about a room over, so she wasn't in my room, but right at the foot of my dad's bed.
Like she was really there in person, in flesh and blood.
As if she was a real person, flesh and blood. So I was like, oh my gosh. It was strange because I remember at 3 years old saying, she's not verbally talking, but she's talking. And now I know that to be telepathy. Now I know that to be clairsentience as well, the feelings, and also with the thoughts with telepathy and the clairsentience with the feelings that she was giving me. Because her jokes, like she was giving me humor, and I couldn't formulate this. I just was happy and I was laughing. And when I look back, I go, my gosh, my grandmother at 3 years old was training me in mediumship. And I, of course I went to my parents and I said, this is happening. And they kind of said, we don't think so. So I was kind of on my own. I was always on my own with this. because
did they say we don't think so because, oh bless you, you've got a good imagination, or was it because they didn't want you to talk about that kind of thing?
It was imagination mostly. I have family members that don't believe that it's possible for mediumship to exist. My father really, I think it was like, it's too good to be true. And so, you know, he was kind of a tough guy. He was an iron worker. He had a really rough job. And he just said, that's not possible. He believed in ghosts, but he could not believe that his family loved ones would ever visit and be able to talk to. And he had his own evidence that he never shared with me. You know, things appearing, apports, that's the word I was looking for, and stuff like that. And he never would share it, but would share it with his siblings. And I find out later, I'm like, oh my gosh, my dad had a lot of evidence of the spirit world and never gave it away to me. But I would hear her at 8 years old stomping upstairs, boom, 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 as if someone's like stomping on the floor above us, because we had three stories. And I would tell all my family members, I'd say, don't you hear this? Don't you hear the stomping? It's like someone's like trying to kick their foot through the ceiling into the, that's how loud it was. And they're like, we don't hear anything. I'm like, what? How is this possible that I'm not just kind of hearing it. I'm hearing it. And then I realized my clairaudience was just kind of jacked up at that moment because I was a kid and I didn't really use it. I say like this ability, if you don't really use it, kind of builds. And then it erupts, and then you have this amazing stuff, and then it gets sort of like a tank of water. It gets used up, and so it builds up again, and bam. So I had those moments, and I distinctively remember how I was different, because at 8 years old, they broke the sound barrier. There was a jet. It flew so fast, it broke the sound barrier. I heard that as if someone was yelling in my ear. I mean, it was real loud. And I said to my parents, I repeated their entire conversation. They were in the kitchen. I was in the living room. So I was using my ability that way. And they were like, how does he hear us? We're whispering. Then secondly, they said to me, why did you drop that box on the floor? And I said, I didn't drop a box on the floor. It was the sound barrier that was being broken by a jet. It was, you know, miles away. We're talking hundreds of miles away or whatever. And they said, no, it sounded like you dropped a box. So I realized, oh my gosh, their level of hearing, the sound barrier, is like a tenth of what I heard. So my clairaudience could hear in the physical world, and then I could hear them as if I'm in the room, two rooms over, them whispering as if I'm right next to them. It was freakish, but that was the discerning moment. I go, okay, here's an example of something in real life, breaking the sound barrier, where I hear it like it's going to hurt my hearing and ruin my hearing. It was so loud where they're hearing it like as if somebody accidentally dropped a little box on the floor.
Yeah.
So at that moment I go, maybe I'm a little bit different than these people.
Wow. At 8 years old.
Yeah. At 8 years old. And then it would quiet down. Like most teens, it kind of quiets down, and it came back again about 18. And then again at 20, I was read by a famous psychic detective. His name's Bill Ward.
Bill Ward.
I didn't know it. I just, something came over me to go to him. Something came, but I didn't know why, but it was just a knowing, you know. He read me and predicted so many things that at the time I thought were ridiculous. He said that I would get into martial arts, which I thought was kind of dumb. He said I would specifically get into Taekwondo. He said I would get into Buddhism, that I would learn how to meditate, quiet my mind, and that I said, none of that's true. I only want to party and forget about this world. That's all I wanted to do at the time. And then here we are 2 years later. I'm into Taekwondo, learning Buddhism, learning how to meditate. And I got my psychic job 2 years later. I mean, it was amazing, you know, but I learned so much from that reading. I did understand and look at his presentation. I did see how he organized. I didn't like some of the things he did, and I loved the other things he did. So just from that one sitting, it pretty much, you know, was 80% of what I needed basically for the rest of my life. And it was like some of those old school readers, and I don't know if you've had a lot of readings from them, but they go for broke. I mean, they swing for the fences. They're, you know, if it might sound crazy and wild to people, but they just throw it out. And that was something that really gave me courage. I mean, you know, today mediums will play it safe, and they'll hunt for evidence, right? they'll only want to read if they know for sure it's going to be an awesome reading or awesome evidence. They, if it's generic, they won't even attempt it. And that's not how it was. When it was old school, it was like, whatever's coming out of our mouths as an old school reader from, you know, 50 years ago, whatever, they always believed it was magnificent. It was immaculate, no matter what it was. They had blind trust. And I've always kept that. And I try to give it to new mediums today. Just have blind trust that whatever comes out of your mouth is golden. It's divine.
You do have to give what you get, don't you?
You can't
censor it in your mind and filter it through and say, I'm not going to say that because it sounds ridiculous. And I learned that the hard way.
And you have to be okay with generic too.
Yes.
But they're not. You know, if you look at a lot of memes, especially, you know, we have social media and a lot of different ways to see mediums around the world. When they're doing contacts, they'll have one communicator and there's a lot of great evidence, but they may bring in another spirit or two, and it's just an acknowledgement. So, but this is breakthrough stuff for a lot of memes because they don't get that. If they bring in an uncle, they think, oh, I got to give 100 pieces of evidence to define this uncle, even though my main spirit communicator was grandmother. It's like, you could just, maybe the uncle just wants to say hi in an acknowledgement. Happens all the time. And then, you know, and bring in another one. And then maybe grandma has more evidence to say. But that's a big struggle. And I feel like, if anything, if classes are out there, they should be trying to just, it should be confidence. It should be, and being okay with generic, because spirits are people, you know?
Yes.
They're still people. They have a decision and choices if they want to give generic or amazing evidence.
You have to be fearless as a medium, don't you? You have to just be completely fearless and trust. Yeah. Don't trust the human beings. You trust the spirit world.
Absolutely. I mean, it's brilliant, because what is a no anyways? If, you know, if I say to you, if I describe to you your relative and you say no to it, how do we know that's a real no? Maybe the sitter, the person receiving the reading, doesn't know or forgot, and it's not really a true no. Trust the spirit first and the person getting read last.
Yeah, exactly. I remember giving this mediumship reading. I was doing a demonstration of mediumship. I think in America you call it a gallery reading. Is that right?
We still call it demonstration. We're starting to steal your stuff. So.
And I remember it was in Billerick. It was in Tony Stockwell's Soul Space. And I was training with him on one of his mentorship programs. And the person I had in the spirit world, I said, I've got a hunter here. And I can see him walking across the ice, and he has animal skins, and he's dressed in animal skins. And I looked at the audience, and all I could see was a sea of white people, sort of middle class, working class people. And I was like, how on earth is this ever going to fit anybody? But I had to just keep going with it. And sure enough, it was taken, it was placed. I was able to give much more information than that. But it just goes to show, if I'd have seen that person and thought in my mind, I'm not going to give that out, then I would have failed the spirit world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes it's like that. And I always say this, especially when you're doing a gallery, a demonstration, like you were just talking about.
Yeah.
It's like mediums walk into a room that has no light, completely black, and we're expected to kind of walk around it and act as if we know what we're doing 100%. And it's like, I say, it's like walking, doing a tightrope walking without a net. We don't get a net. We got to go out there. We don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And I'm a fly, and it is fearless. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and it's only by doing it, I think, practicing and continuing to do it, that you trust the spirit world more and more and more. Because I've got a background as an actor, and I know if I step out on a stage, I know that script backwards. I know exactly what I'm doing, what I'm about to say, all the feelings I'm going to generate. So you know what you're doing. Or a musician will know the song, the lyrics. A stand-up comedian will know his routine. But as a medium, we stand up there so vulnerable, we don't know anything.
Vulnerable because we don't know anything, which is really freakish, right? And the second thing is that, unlike, well, kind of like comedians, because there's that skepticism, and even audience members for comedians, they sometimes don't believe this comedian's going to be funny either when they come out. So I actually, it's a good analogy that you're using, because I studied a lot of comedians to see parallels between mediumship and stand-up comedians, and there's an awful lot. The brilliant Jerry Seinfeld said he doesn't let anyone introduce him by giving all these wonderful adjectives and Nick, you know, like, Jerry's wonderful, great, he'll make you laugh. He doesn't let them do that. Same with mediums. I always say try not to let people introduce you to say how great you are, because when you do that, it's, and even with comedians, they'll start to, the audience will fold their arms and go, okay, prove it to us.
Yeah.
So Jerry will run, literally run out on stage before someone can overdo it by introducing him and going and saying how fantastic he is. He'll run into stage and get right into his act because he knows. Because we're in control and so is the comedian. We dictate it. I always say you have to trust the spirit world. But I like to think of it as I have more confidence than the spirit world. That's how I approach it. I tell my students, you have to believe so blindly, you have to have more confidence than the spirit world has, because some of those spirit communicators are still making up their mind. They're still deciding, I don't want to know if I want to use Ann or Mark tonight. Maybe I can do this, maybe I can't. Maybe they're clairs, I can use those, maybe I can't. Maybe they're frame of reference, I don't know. I don't even know what I want to say. Should I apologize? All these things. So if you kind of have this positive confidence for them that you can do this, come closer, I got you, I got your back, and I will represent you, whether you want to go on and give fantastic evidence or if you just want an acknowledgement, I'll honor both. That's really the thoughts that I send out to them. And no matter what the audience is saying, even if they say no to something, my thought back to the spirit is, don't worry, don't let that throw you, I got you, and they keep going. So I would say we have to have more confidence than not just the audience, but the spirit world too.
And how do you think, how do you teach your student mediums to deal with a no?
First of all, I think organization and structure of how you're presenting the evidence is critical to understand what a no is. If you give out 100 things to describe a grandfather and somebody says no, what are they saying no to? Did they say no to the color pants he wore? Did they say no to the shoes he was wearing or his hair color or his glasses? So I try to get them not to just go on this sort of treadmill of evidence and bombard somebody. You know, either you go one by one or a few things. And that way you can kind of see and navigate through those no's. But first, we don't know always what a no is when we're getting it. And I always say mediumship isn't perfect. If I describe you today or a spirit today, and let's say 9 out of the 10 things were absolutely correct and they're super detailed, but one thing doesn't make sense, don't throw it out. Don't say, you know, like if I'm a carpenter, but I wore blue shoes my whole life and I did headstands before I got into work, that's pretty unique evidence. But I said, you know, his car was red, but it was really brown. Are you really going to throw away that that's the grandfather? And it's not my grandfather. He drove a Bronco. You know, I said, we got to use common sense too. Yeah. It's not perfect. And so I always check in. We call that checking in. Does that make sense? Not for me or the spirit, but for the recipient. And because I know it's all meant to be whatever I'm giving, but I want them to still sort of be with me and not be over inundated with all this information as well. So there's a lot to those. I think organization's one. And secondly, don't let it throw you. Just keep kind of going and see where you're at.
Do you still see your grandmother?
It's a great question. Oddly enough, she came through to me last night.
And no way.
So it's funny because I'm sure she's connecting with you right now for you to ask me that. To tell me that she'd be and this morning too. So I know she's in this room. She comes through a lot in readings. She loves using mediums. She also was a reader.
She was.
She read cards and she read tea leaves. But she only did it like, you know, for the family and friends. And I was never told that. I was told that only maybe 9 months ago. So I went my whole life, nearly 4 decades, not knowing she was a reader. I had mediums tell me, and she told me she had ability from the spirit world. But I had no one living to verify that stuff. I just had to rely on my ability for and the communication from her to say that. But yes, I don't see her objectively clairvoyantly like I did when I was three. That doesn't happen.
So when you say you feel she's here now, how does that feel for you?
For me, her personality is one of the first things. We call that clairsentience, where you can feel on a mediumistic or psychic level. And I can get that, her laughter, I can see her smile. She sends me thoughts telepathically, all this simultaneously as we're talking. As I'm talking to you, she's doing this right now. And I feel like she put a drop into your head for you to ask that. I don't see her clairvoyantly like I did before, but I do see different spirits like that. Even ones that I'm doing a gallery for, I'll see them like they're in the room. We call that objective clairvoyance. Spirits, they won't always, if you have multiple clairs as a medium, they're not always going to use the same clairs. You know, that's another big myth. And there are some mediums that will only have maybe one sense, like clairvoyance, while others will express six senses. You know, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, claircognizance, clairalience, clairgustance.
That's a lot of things to say for people that don't understand what the clairs are. Could you explain that for those people that may not know?
So there are six, at least six, and there might be more senses mediumistically that the spirit world could potentially use. To see is clairvoyance. So when we see some, you know, symbology in our mind's eye or actually see a spirit, that would be clairvoyance. Clairaudience is to hear internally, externally, subjectively, objectively. To feel, some people feel medical ailments, some people feel personality, and some actually feel energy. That's clairsentience. Clairalience is to smell, when you're smelling perfume or cigarettes from the spirit world. That would be clairalience. Clairgustance is to taste. And in fact, the first time I knew I had clairgustance, I was invited to do a paranormal hunt, ghost hunt, in all these mansions. And they took me into a room, and I tasted pennies. And it felt like that. And I go, there was six homicides. Because to me, blood tastes like pennies, that copper feel. And they said, absolutely, young man. How did you know there were six murders here? And I go, you know, if I was to explain it to you, we'd be here all night. So then the last, of course, claircognizance, which is if I believe there's one clair that we might possibly have, which I can't prove that, it's just theory, it could be claircognizance. I know there's a lot of people that want to say it's clairsentience, but I know mediums that are not clairsentient, so it's not that. Claircognizance is to know. And I think under that umbrella, we have modern day New Age and all these other people that call themselves channelers. I really think that's claircognizance. Also, telepathy is sort of under that umbrella of claircognizance. It's just a kind of a more defined, more psychic versus mediumistic with that. But you do use telepathy with mediumship too. That's a lot. But, and again, we shouldn't be training mediums to forcibly say you can get all these. We want to focus on medium strengths, not their weaknesses.
Yes.
You know, and then a lot of classes that I see, they're trying to force mediums to be something they're not. Instead of, let's look at what they do, let's look at their strengths, and how do we further unfold it them? There are some clairaudient mediums, but not everyone's clairaudient. Some of your clairs may be here for a year, and then get quiet for other years, you know, and it's not right or wrong. Just because someone doesn't have six clairs for their mediumship doesn't mean they're a worse or inferior medium to another one. It's just the spirit world needs many, many mediums. It needs this. Your unique story is what they need to say hello again.
It's interesting because some of my senses, some of my clairs come in and then I don't use them for ages. And then you might use another one. Like maybe I might taste something one day. I might smell something in another reading. I might clearly know something absolutely without shadow of a doubt. So it does depend on circumstances, who you're reading for. And
it depends on you, depends on them, circumstances, and the spirit communicator.
Yes.
I mean, so that's a lot. And people, and I think new mediums that I talk to, they think it's just them. And that's such a shame, because then they have no peace. They feel, oh, I didn't get not just the clairvoyance, but maybe the particular piece of evidence wasn't as strong as they wanted to. But how do we know that's not the will from the spirit communicator?
Yes, you can't impose your own will and give what the information you want to give, or you have to work with your spirit person and it be in a position of receiving the information.
Yeah, and you know, that's brilliant, and realizing there's still people. So I try to get new mediums not to have this habit of going, I failed. Because what's the spirit world listening? You're like, whoa, Mark or Ann said that wasn't a good reading. Maybe I don't want to use mediums anymore. Now you've put off some spirit communicators. They go, man, I gave it my best. You know, I gave it my best and they said the evidence isn't good. Well, maybe I don't want to try again now. So I say, whatever it is, no matter if it's short, long, unique, or generic, whatever name you want to give it, please just realize that this is a miracle. You know, if we put the intent that it's a spirit who's in this invisible world in heaven saying hello to someone here, that's a miracle. You know, I mean, I always say too, imagine if you passed away, didn't know mediums were real, go over to the other side and somebody says, hey, Ann, did you know you can talk to the earth again? I mean, you would say, what? No way. No, not true. You're like, yeah, look at crazy Mark and crazy Ann. You can go say hello to them. They'll be able to talk to my niece or to my granddaughter again.
Yeah.
So that's pretty special.
It is. It's really special. And that's beautifully put as well. So how do you think in terms of how mediumship is evolving and changing, you know, what are we doing now? What did we do before? And what does the future hold for mediumship, do you think?
Oh, a lot. So it's taken me a long time to realize this, but we can't do everything that the old mediums did, but we can't get rid of what they did either. In order to grow and evolve as mediums today and going into the future, we have to have a balance of understanding what mediums used to do, as well as doing our way, our unique way. How do we evolve? We have to be ourselves. We have to be ourselves and really take time to understand how we receive communication and also self-awareness with the human being. Not every medium is destined to do this for career or to teach it. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's millions of mediums on the earth. I saw a study or a poll once. They said there was 1.5 to 2 million mediums on the earth currently. That's a lot, but they're not all meant to go on to be on a platform or demonstrating in front of audiences. And that's the thing, you know, so the most important thing is self-development. We call it self-awareness. Every medium throughout history, this is why history is so important. In every corner of this world, if they found a medium in their family, it doesn't matter where they are on the earth, they would put them somewhere like reclusion or something like that. And why? So they can get quiet. Why is quiet so important? Well, it teaches you to listen. And as a medium, you have to listen because it doesn't work any other way, right? Secondly, understand them as human beings, a shadow self, their insecurities, what they don't like. If you're not good at drawing or painting, if you're not a good singer, there's nothing wrong with that. You need that because it strengthens your strengths. We understand what we love by what we don't love, you know, so suffering, it helps compassion, the inter R. Every medium throughout history has told us this, but I felt when I came into this line of work that wasn't being promoted. It was all about what could I do? And this is a power and this is, you know, this is great. But there was no self-awareness. There was no self-development. There was none of that. It was just, you know, it was just kind of using the ability and that was it. But that's nice. But it won't sustain you for the long haul. So self-awareness, self-development, knowing yourself, what is your passions? What are your hobbies? What are you looking for in relationships? What are you doing for your health? And being okay with the fact that you're not perfect and, you know, whatever you're not good at in your life, whether it was math or if it was fixing cars or if it was whatever it was, you remember those things. Because it really helps you to really look at, especially as a medium, you have this ability that you're basically part of a miracle. But who cares what you're bad at, right? Who cares? You don't see the opera singers, or even your analogy of actors or stand-up comedians, beating themselves up at night. What, you know, if they can't do math, or if they can't wash the dishes as good as their partner, or whatever these other things are that we all as human beings do. I mean, we really are, if we're really going to evolve in mediumship, we have to go back to really getting quiet with ourselves every single day, whether it's going out in nature or going into your room and getting quiet. There should be there to understand the human you, and then have spirit be able to talk to you too, because the human and the divine have to agree. It can't be, I'm doing this because my spirit guides told me to go on the platform. No, that's not true. It has to be you, the human being, that says, I want to be a platform medium because I love it, because it speaks to me. Not because it'll make me money, not because it's a competition, because you'll be in a roadblock the rest of your life if you do those things for that as motivation. So self-awareness, developing and transmuting the shadow self, then figuring out how different you are, how unique you are as a medium. If you stay true to those things, we'll continue to evolve.
What do you think the future holds for mediumship then, Mark?
I think it holds this sort of bridge between not just skeptics and cynics with mediums, but I think mediumship will start to evolve in a way where it's less about the fire and all that. There's a little bit more substance. There's a little bit more about the compassion and how it can help and how to inspire people, and less about the secret passwords, and less about what was their favorite hobby in eighth grade and give me the lottery numbers. A little bit less about that stuff, more about, you know, more about the education, the realistic expectations of mediumship, that it's not perfect. That it can be very helpful, not only to help you over grief, but also inspire people to also be themselves. Because even if you're getting a mediumship reading and you're not a medium, being part of that process is inspirational, that you might want to go on and be a writer, or you might want to go on to be a chef, whatever that is. That's the unique thing about, I think, being a medium, is that you are vulnerable, like you mentioned earlier, on a platform. And some audience members will say, you know, I don't know where I stand on this mediumship thing, but you were able to do what you do and your talent. Now I want to do it. Now I want to do my thing. I want to be an actor, or I want to be a chef, or I want to be a painter. I didn't have that before. I didn't have that inspiration. But seeing you go out there and doing it because you love it, regardless of the haters, that's inspiring to me. And I really think mediumship is about inspiration. I know not a lot of mediums believe that. They believe it's to prove that life continues. I think that's second. I really do. I don't think mediumship is about proving to the world that the communication between the two worlds is real. I think it's about inspiring people, inspiring them to be unique and be themselves.
See, I find that fascinating, because I often think, if we truly can communicate with the spirit world, which I 100,000,000% believe we can, surely there has to be more we can do with this skill than just give messages from grandma. There must be something far more important and vital that we can bring to the world through this unique communication, two-way communication. And when you talk about inspiration and how we can be inspired here, whatever our career, whatever our job, I think you're onto something there, Mark.
And it shows you, you're right. I mean, it's not about the evidence and the messages and, wow, I wore green shoelaces when I was 7 years old, and only the medium would know that. It's not really that. Why is, you know, grandmother communicating with you? I have a sibling that says, well, I never met that relative. And I say to that sibling, I say, if I was in the spirit world and I had a grandson or granddaughter, I would move heaven and earth. I would move heaven and earth to say hello, no matter what, even if I didn't meet them. I know I would. Maybe you're different, but you're not over there. So when you get over there, it's a little different. If you're over there on the other side and you go, I can help the earth again using this medium, to show them I still care. That means big picture is we're supposed to care. If they're on the other side, which we all kind of say is this wonderful place, and they still think about us, what does that mean? The big picture is we really are supposed to get along. That's the true inspiration, that this planet has to be humanitarians at some point. We have to get closer to that. And I think that the other component to being a medium is being a humanitarian. And I really do think if you look at history of all the interventions from the spirit world, going back to Joan of Arc, even in World War I, World War II, there was intervention from the spirit world to mediums because it matters. This world matters. What we're doing in this lifetime matters. I was taught and told from the books and from other professional psychics when I first got in that life for mediums and psychics, this is just like school. That's all it is. And they were very adamant about never reincarnating because they said this life in the physical world, just school. It's not school. It is school. You can learn, right? But this is important. It's not just, well, I'm here and I'm just waiting out my time and I'm going back to heaven and that's it. If they're intervening, if they're using us as mediums, that has to mean this life matters much more than just, let's just get through it. You know, it was such a heartbreaking thing for me to hear from others reading books. It's in books from, you know, some other psychics that came before me and there are ones, and I get it. But you're right. I mean, the inspiration to do what you want to do, play out your passions and your strengths, but also love, try to love one another or at least get along. I think that's really why they intervene on a big global macro level. I think that's really the true intervention there.
That's beautifully put. So talk to us, Mark, about astrology, because you mentioned that that's your second love, your second passion. Tell us about that. I don't know. I know a little bit about astrology, but I don't really know about it. So tell us how that works for you and what your passion and why you're so passionate about it.
Well, I think for many of us, me included, maybe even you, astrology was something I thought I vaguely understood, but it really never made a lot of sense. And then one day, another medium said, you know, you're really going to have to just let your spirit guide your life. And I said, okay, I'll do that. Let my spirit guide my life, my spirit, the divine in me. All of a sudden, astrology made sense. And then all of a sudden, I started to channel astrology, where I would get a lot of insights, a lot of things that it's very unconventional stuff that I found in astrology. Astrology is just another way to understand our lives. Astrology is a clock. Our lives really are symbolic through mythologies, and astrology shows how these mythologies will play out in a very unique way, specifically in different areas of our life. The mythology of Jupiter or the sun or Venus and what area of life of these things are going to play out and how much or how little. It's an algorithm. I always say astrology is an algorithm because it's the job of the astrologer to figure out what's the code for Anne, what's the code for Mark? What's going to make them the happiest? What is their relationships going to be like? What is the struggle? And so astrology, like mediumship, has to evolve, just like the mythologies have to evolve. We have to evolve all these things. And mediumship has changed dramatically. The planets are not the same as they used to be. In fact, there's a lot of planets such as Saturn and Pluto that were looked at as very maleficent, especially in ancient times. It was like, bad Pluto, bad destruction. Pluto still can destroy, but it's for our highest good. It changes. You know, tarot, you have that death card, the tower card. We go, oh my God, scary. Now we know it's changed, right? So there's an evolution. And astrology, just like mediumship, it's whatever the level of consciousness of the astrologer brings to the chart. Mediumship, your level of being humanitarian, if you can get there, at least try to, it will really strengthen your mediumship and really strengthen the communication there. Same thing with the astrology. If you can kind of do some self-awareness work on yourself and incorporate a little bit of that compassion with astrology, looking at things objectively, not subjectively, to say, let's look at this from a higher source. Because they say the greatest form of intelligence is to observe without judging. And I think that's God, right? So if you're looking at circumstances in your life, a flat tire. Is a flat tire bad? Maybe. and maybe it'll cost you money, but maybe it saved you some heartbreak. Maybe it stopped you from going into traffic that was another collision or something else. That's how we have to approach astrology too. We look at Pluto and Saturn. Oh, they're bad. No, they're not. Saturn defines things. They say Saturn is going to make it depressing or sad, whatever it is. Say it's in your 10th house, which is career. Oh, Mark's going to have a sad career. That's what they would say before in ancient times. Now we know is no. Saturn defines things. It reduces things to get you specific. This is what I want to do. I want to be specific in career. I don't want to be a painter. I want to paint door handles. It's defining it. And that's what Saturn does. But before, we had a different level of consciousness. Same with mediumship. If you go back hundreds, if not thousands of years, they had a different level of consciousness. We do, and tarot, I'm sure a lot of your audience is listening that do tarot. It's changed a little bit, you know, how we do that. Mediumship has changed. And so astrology has to too. It's this constant evolution. I have no idea what's going to be like 1,000 years from now, astrology, but it's going to be a lot more intricate. We're really new to using asteroids. That's a new thing in the last half century or so. So that's a really new thing to broaden it. And it, because honestly, scientifically, we've only known asteroids over the last, you know, couple centuries as well. A lot, you know, a lot sooner than, they're a lot newer to us than the planets are. Recognizing them, naming them and all that. There's the mythologies in asteroids is out of this world. We give names of gods and goddesses through Roman and Greek and Egyptian to asteroids, but we also give names because whoever found and discovered the asteroids would name them after their kids or their romantic partner. And they still, you can put those in charts and mean something to the person getting read. So, I mean, it's wild. It's endless. Just like mediumship is endless, astrology truly is endless of where it could take us and to understand ourselves. But the same time, it's not perfect. We call these things a cult. It means secret. It doesn't mean you're going to get all the secrets. It just means secret. So it's not easy. Even for us who can see the unseeable, we're not going to see everything. And it doesn't matter. Like what we see as mediums and astrologers is good enough to get us where the person needs to be. That's really it.
If somebody then, for instance, me, and probably many listening, want to delve into and explore astrology, it seems to me like such a vast topic. I wouldn't even know where to begin. And also I feel a bit disheartened even looking into it because it seems so vast. What's the point? I'll never learn it all. So where do we start? How do we get to know more about astrology ourselves?
I have a different approach. I say start wherever you think it's fun, wherever that is. Okay, if it's the sun or if it's the planets, start there.
Okay.
What brought you into astrology in the first place? What was fun about it? So if you're like, well, I thought it was cool that, you know, Jupiter and Pluto mean something, then start there. Dive into that, you know, through your own research, through your own education, and, you know, explore that. And that might take you to the other stuff. Start where your heart is, because that will be sort of this driving force to figuring out all the other stuff. But don't start where somebody else is telling you, because it'll never go right. Start where you're interested at, and then it'll grow. Just like mediumship, you know, if you're clairvoyant, you don't start with clairaudience, right? Because if the spirit world appeared before you, you saw it. So you wouldn't say, I can't hear you. You would say, wow, I can see grandmother, I can see grandfather. Same with astrology. Wow, I thought that was cool that the sun means confidence and it's our goals and it's our driving force. It's who we're becoming. That's cool. Or my mom who will always say, I'm so attracted to the moon. Look at the moon. Study the moon. Why do you like it? What is about it? Just explore that and that might take you down the rabbit hole to further understand it. But if you do it somebody else's way and start where they started, that's where the frustration comes in.
That's so great. Then it seems like a chore. Like, oh, but the way that you put it there, you're like, of course, that seems so simple. Why didn't I even think about that?
I can't listen. I was never this wise. So don't, this is all trial. This is all bad. Like I said, my career as a psychic medium and astrologer is baptism by fire. So it was all about learning on the fly.
So before we go, I want to ask you one more question, and then I want you to give everybody an exercise, if you would. The question I want to ask you is, your grandmother, who's present here, I sense her as well throughout this podcast. When she comes around, do you look upon her as one of your guides now, or is she just a helpful family member?
She gave that to you, didn't she?
Yes, she asked me to ask that ages ago. I was waiting.
We double linked Anne during this podcast because she told me she gave that to you. So, interesting enough, another medium brought her through, and it was a renowned medium, and said, "I believe your grandmother's not just family, but she wants to act like a guide as well. So she wants to actually be both." So this is a great question because, again, starting out back in the late 90s and early 2000s, I would read these books and they would say, "Mark, spirit guides cannot be family. They are spirit guides and they are so awesome and unbelievable. They're spirit gods, and your grandparents can't be spirit guides," all this stuff. So like these rules, right? And then you get down to it and you realize, what is a guide? A guide is to help, right? To be of some help. Is there spirits that are higher evolved in their consciousness? Yes. But could you have a relative that does want to some degree, be a spirit guide? Yes. Is it as common as people think? Probably not. I mean, there's a lot of readings where I've done where they're like, "Can't my grandmother be?" And she's like, "Well, she's around you, guiding you or helping you." But here's the thing. Do we, or would we really want to ask all of our loved ones about relationships and romance? Would we really have the vulnerability, and would we really trust them? Because we remember uncle or grandmother, right? And we never ask them about our romantic lives when they were alive. And now we're going to do that when they pass on. That vulnerability is not quite there. When you have a spirit guide, however, who never shared a life, in this life at least, with you, right? You don't have that problem. You can be vulnerable, very vulnerable. So although it's nice that they're higher evolved, some of these spirits that we call spirit guides and all that, and they do have a more philosophy and insights probably on a deeper level, but I really think it's about the vulnerability that I can go and ask about career, or if I want to, or about romance with someone who doesn't have any family ties to me, because I won't ask uncle or the grandmother while they're alive about some of these questions. I'm really not going to have such an easy time doing that while they're passed on. But because we've double linked, this particular grandmother wants to do that for both of us. So.
Wow. Amazing. Well, thank you, grandmother. What did you call her? Granny? How did you call
her? Well, she passed away when I was 3, so I didn't really have any name for her.
Right.
Well, when I see her, I just kind of, I don't give her a name at all. I've never really have.
Right.
I just kind of smile. I go, "It's you." You know, really. So that's an interesting, yeah, I never have addressed her as, her formal name is Esther. But I never call her by grandmother, Esther, or any name. I just kind of go, "It's you."
Yeah.
I know her by the soul, you know.
Yes, it's the feeling. And
the feeling.
The knowing of her. Mark, would you set an ask you to set an exercise for people to try at home? Because at the beginning, you talked about seeing people's auras.
This is a good one. So I say, trying to think of a person right now, those of you at home listening, and pick a family member or someone close to you that you think you can't see their aura. You know, think of that person. Just if it's mom, if it's dad, if it's uncle, if it's brother, sister, or if it's a romantic partner, just put a word in your head and think of that person. And just as you said, "I can't see their aura," right? Now, visually in your mind, or say out loud their name, and whatever color comes to you initially, just keep it. So just say the word mom or Susie or Michael, whatever it is, and whatever color comes in, bam, just keep it right away. Even if it's a split second, just go with it. Now, some of you that just listened to this saw it. Some of you did not see it. Some of you felt it. Some of you know it. So if you're like, "I didn't see the color," but if I say, "Well, what did you think? What does your gut say?" "Oh, green." "It's green." Some of the people close to you, you won't be able to see their colors because they're too close to you. So even though some out there are listening and they can see colors in the aura clairvoyantly, there's a lot of audience members that can't see colors clairvoyantly. They just claircognizantly know color of people. There's a lot of psychics out there and mediums that just use clairsentience and claircognizance to read the colors. You can feel colors. I know it's strange to say that, to say, I feel red in somebody's aura. They do. What can you say? They just feel it, clairsentience. And some of those people who feel color are just as remarkable, if not more remarkable, than those that can see it. So that's a huge misconception about the aura, that you have to see it. And there's a lot of times where I don't see, feel, know the color of somebody's aura. I don't need the colors to know to how to read them. But it's a nice little add-on, you know. So that's a really great exercise, especially for somebody close to you that you will say, I can't get any color for this person. Just get their name, and instantly, if you felt, know, or see the color, go with it, write it down. And then the second part to that is sit with that. If you got green, whether you knew it as a thought, felt it as green, or saw it as green, write that on a piece of paper in just 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is. Just sit with a short period of time, and what does that mean to you? To you, not what the book says. Forget the book. Colors are not universal. I know a lot of people are like, colors are universal. Really? Because here in America, white is used to celebrate, and it's a positive. But if you go into overseas, they use white as grieving. They use it for funerals and wakes. So we do have this contrast. We don't always agree on colors. Green to Ann is not green to Mark. And that's important because your spirit gave you that color. If Ann gets a reading today and someone says, oh, Ann's aura is blue, and then Mark comes along and says, no, it's red, it doesn't mean one was wrong. Their colors are not universal. And this is very controversial, but it's true, because my spirit and my soul gave me that color for Ann, but another person's soul and spirit saw something else. And they have to be both right, because I'm sure there is, because they can offer a unique insight for Ann that could go on to be very helpful for her as well.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much. I'm sure people will be trying that all over the world. That's fabulous, Mark. Tell us where you can be found on the internet. People want to have a reading with you. They want to get their astrological chart drawn up by you. So tell us what you're offering, if you've got courses coming up.
So I'm always teaching, and I'm teaching right now, and I usually teach every single month, 12 months out of the year. I teach beginning mediumship, advanced levels, even professional levels of mediumship and psychic development. I will be teaching astrology at some point. So all the stuff can be found on my website at markthemidwestmedium.com. My email address is on the website. You can contact me there. I do offer a lot of different types of readings as well, all through Skype for anyone around the world. There are psychic and mediumship readings that I offer as services. And I offer a lot of different types of astrology readings as well. So if you're willing and able, please contact me through there. My passion is demonstrating mediumship. So, that's what I really love to do, whether it's in front of an audience, in person, or whether it's virtually or whatever it is.
And I know, Mark, also that you've just been on television. And tell us about that.
So, yes, I was just on VH1's Black Ink Crew Chicago. It's broadcast worldwide. That aired July 13th, 2020. And it was an amazing experience. They treated me as a medium with a lot of respect.
That's good to hear. That's great to hear.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I just kept saying to myself. People were asking me, like, what am I thinking? The only thing I thought of the whole time was, can't believe how well I'm being treated. But as a medium, I wasn't told anything. It was called a double blind, or I call it a double blind reading, where the person doesn't know me and I don't know them. And that's usually how we do readings anyways. But to then have to go and perform that and illustrate that, and then it being broadcast to millions of people around the world, is a different level of stress.
It was a fantastic reading, I have to say. Your work was beautiful to watch. It was incredible.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's funny, too, because, as a medium, I've been through a lot, and I've done a lot of different types of readings where it's, virtual or in front of audiences. So I'm used to different things being thrown at me, and you never can prepare. Like, there's no prep. You just go, and you just trust yourself. But as soon as you sit down, your mouth opens to explain it, all your worries go away. And that's what, I mean, that's what they said to me. Well, do you want our help at all? Like to tell her anything? I go, no, I got this. I'll tell her what to say and what not to say. And all I said is, I just need a yes, no, I don't know. That's all I want from you. That's it. Nothing more. Don't tell me anything else. And I try to get my students to do that as well when I teach, because you're not helping the medium when you tell them. If they tell you, yes, my father was a carpenter in 1975, now I am the medium, I can't use that. I can't say that now. So you're not helping when people are giving a lot of validation. It doesn't help the medium. New mediums believe they go, can I get validation? I just want to know the rest of the story. And I say, nope, I don't teach that way. But some mediums will say, you know, I want to know the rest of the story. I want to know this person that I just brought through. And I said, no, you don't. Because next week or the week after, that spirit might come through again and give you more information. And now you don't have to worry about it. You know, so when I was there, I can't be more grateful than I am. I really am so grateful that they treat me with respect. And that's the thing that I'll never forget, because there are other occasions where I was asked to do television and I didn't feel totally the respect was quite there, and I didn't do it because of that. This was an occasion where it was just totally fair, completely fair. And that's all I asked. I said, just give me a fair shot here. I don't want anything else. If you give me fairness, then this will be great for all of us.
Yeah.
And I felt like the post product of that reading illustrated that it was even keel and it was fair by both parties. I felt that's what the illustration, and then of course, you know, it was an honor. These people did not believe in me. I mean, not in a bad way. They just, you know, they didn't know who I was. So, so they were like, oh my gosh, like they didn't think like I was a scam artist or anything, but they just, you know, didn't know. So to see them like, oh my gosh, there is another world out there because of what you were able to give us today. They're like, how are we ever going to thank you, Mark? Just do you. That's how you can thank me.
It's a beautiful gift to give to somebody.
Absolutely.
And also, Mark, you've got a YouTube channel.
Yes, I love my YouTube channel. It's my baby. So my YouTube channel is quite a few things on there. One, and there's a big astrology sort of resource there that I do weekly videos about the current astrology affecting everybody. It's not sun sign astrology. This is, we call this mundane astrology, where what I'm talking about affects everybody on the planet. So I want to bring astrology to the modern age where it actually can be used to sort of help us and guide us to some degree. But I also have other videos about mediumship there too. And I've created a series of about a dozen videos. It's called Learn Mediumship from Mark. And I did this because I channeled one day. I said, if I want to leave something behind, I would want someone who couldn't afford a penny to pay for a class to not be left behind, whether they're in a third world country or wherever they are. Because I hear that sometimes, that, you know, I don't have any money and all that. And I'm like, well, I have something now that nobody can complain about, that they say they have no help. And hopefully that will be there, you know, forever in the internet and YouTube and all that. But I believe when I made those 12 videos or so, that it was designed to be good enough for anybody who thinks they can communicate with the invisible world to have some help, enough of a nudge, and they can go on and maybe unfold on their own. That's really, I mean, that's, I call it my baby because I absolutely love it, but I really wanted to get back in some sort of way so that other mediums out there, maybe 20, 30, 100 years from now, will go, oh my gosh, this crazy Mark left behind some videos, and, you know, I didn't think anybody cared, but it looks like he cared to some degree, and now I'm not alone with this, so.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's a brilliant resource for people to go to, and they can learn so much from you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's great. Mark, thank you so much for coming on Psychic Matters. You've shared so much information here with everybody and been so generous and kind and fascinating to talk to. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Anne. I really appreciate this. I'm so grateful. So thank you for having me on here.
It's a pleasure.
Well, that was psychic medium and astrologer Mark, the Midwest medium, doing some incredible work out there in the world. All the links and resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes, plus a full transcription, and those are over on my website, www.anteato.com. So head there and you can pick everything up. Now, I have a training course you might want to join, starting this Sunday, 16th of August 2020. For those of you interested in learning with me online, it's called How to Build a Strong Psychic Foundation. Check it out on my website. It's £100. It's a four-week short course, a couple of hours a week. It's easy to fit into your schedule. There will be a short talk from me and then plenty of exciting psychic exercises to try out with other students from across the world, and time for plenty of feedback and Q&A. So do consider joining me. And as I say, all the details are on my website, anteato.com. And for those of you listening to this in the future who might have missed out on this particular course, do keep an eye on my website where I will be announcing all of my online courses. And I hope that you will consider joining me on one of those. Be great to meet you guys. It just remains for me to say a very big thank you to all of you. I really appreciate you, and thank you so very much for listening. Have a fantastic couple of weeks, everybody. Try out the exercise that Mark gave about feeling and seeing other people's auras, and let us both know how you got on over on the Psychic Matters Group Facebook page. Until next time, my name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.